Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and boys and girls, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. It's so nice to have you with us on this January the 16th on the West Coast, now January the 17th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Wow, lots of things going on in the world, and I'm going to go straight to tonight's guest, just because I am steering this ship tonight, and and I can make that choice if I want. Tonight's guest is a longtime journalist and newspaper publisher, and he has been, I think he's now approaching or somewhere in his 12th year, if not just the 11th, soon approaching 12 years of publishing with his wife, Ingrid Castle, and the Idaho Observer, which is my home base for my journalistic endeavors, my investigative genealogical research that is finally making it around the world and revealing some previously unknown facts about who these people are we call presidents and other politicians. And tonight's guest comes to us with a heavy hand and a heavy heart because he's been delivering the Idaho Observer for the past couple of days. So with that, my publisher and editor, Mr. Don Harkins. How are you, Don?
Well, I'm doing okay, and it is. It's been quite a fast and furious last couple of days. Like I mentioned to you just a few minutes ago, there's been several different editions of the paper over the last, and we are, by the way, in our 12th year. The first paper we published was in January of 1997. If you would have asked me at that time whether we would still have a country in 12 years wherein we could be printing a newspaper, I would have said you're crazy. But here we are. This thing kind of just limps along. And throughout my career, I would say going all the way back to the Oregon Observer in 1995 and 1996, there's been seven or eight editions of the paper that have been particularly difficult to put out. It seems that things get in the way or, you know, just stuff happens that delays publication and even, to some degree, threatens the ability to actually get it out. And this was one of those. And we overcame the odds. We overcame a couple of delays. And we've got it out. It's 28 pages this month, which is the first time in all the years that we've put out a 28-page paper. And it's pretty powerful on a number of fronts, and we've just spent the last couple of days, because when you're a guerrilla publisher, you're also the guerrilla distributor, and so getting the mail out and getting deliveries made is another aspect of the whole machinery. And we've completed that. Our final deliveries are made. We arrived back here at about quarter till 10, and now I'm ready to rock and roll with you, Don.
Well, great. Great to have you. And that was a unique intro I did for you. It's a little
yeah,
better.
Yeah. Turn it over to me because you're commander of this ship. The icebergs be damned, right?
Exactly. I just did 2 hours of radio on with Melody Hallett. Actually, it was, and I should say Katie O'Brien. It was a very interesting show. They asked a lot of questions, good questions, and I had to do a lot of talking. So I'm like on that, you know, microphone broadcasting buzz right now, and I'm over into more familiar ground. I had to do that one on the telephone. So I'm, you know, now my hands are free. I can look at my computer. I can do things. I can grab my coffee cup while you're talking. I couldn't do that during that interview. So anyway. You and I have been through, and I should say Ingrid, too. We don't want to leave her out of this.
Right.
You know, just, holy hell, the last couple of months getting this article out. And you see how complex this was. There's a lot of anticipation by the readership and the listening audience to to read this research. They've heard us talk about it. They know, they sense something is not right, something is wrong with what's going on in our country and in the world. And who is this guy that comes out of thin air and cleans the adoration of the propagandized media and the advertisers? And none of this makes sense other than it's just a big script. In fact, I referred to it yesterday on the show with Ken Adachi as this is the second version of The Wizard of Oz. Everybody's from Kansas, you know, except Barack, you know. Somebody hit their head somewhere along the way.
And, well, his mom was allegedly from Kansas. Fort Leavenworth, you bet.
Yeah, the mom and the grandparents and the whole nine yards. Well, it just, you know, it recently hit me that that's just like the Wizard of Oz story. I mean, and from what you've seen, we're traveling down the yellow brick road for sure.
Well, yes, and that's something that I found unique, because several different people now have written books on Obama. A few that come to mind, I believe Jerome Corsi has written one, and he's a very esteemed journalist in my eyes, and Webster Tarpley, who, very esteemed historian in my eyes. I don't agree with his political philosophies. I think he's fundamentally a socialist, and he wouldn't even disagree with me. We're friends, so I don't agree with a lot of the interpretations of his data, but nevertheless, he's a very excellent researcher and has put together, several months back, slammed together a book on Obama, and it doesn't even hit on many of the things that you found. And what I find special about your research, going back to the sheriff's story that we ran on the I.O. in April, May, and June of last year, and then this year we did the Stooges, the Three Stooges go to Washington, the Three Stooges being John McCain, Barack Obama, and Hillary Clinton. We haven't done Hillary yet, but we shouldn't count her out because she's obviously a player and she's in the middle of all this. But there's a certain model of research that you've stumbled upon, and it's really very logical, and that is when you think about families and you think about the history of this country, all of them came over on boats up until a certain point because that was the only mode of transportation available, and people were coming in from all over the world, and I think most of the people that we're associating with or concerned about are of European ancestry. And so these families came over on boats. So that's where you start. And immediately, you've hit on something here that the anomalies begin at that point. And whatever their public personas are, whatever the generally reported, stories are of these people, they just don't add up. And so when you begin picking apart those anomalies, the lies and deceptions and obfuscations begin making themselves apparent. And as long as you stick to the original story and you buy without questioning what it is they've made themselves out to be, and you elect them or you believe them based upon that framework, everything's fine. But the second you begin probing even the most basic things like a birth certificate and you find that they don't exist, man, the opportunities for going down rabbit holes just open up immediately.
Mm-hmm. And I've said this on other shows, and I may have mentioned it to you, that actually the rabbits are no longer down in those holes. And basically,
right.
You know, when you come out, you got to, like, brush off the turds. It's nasty down there. That's all I can say.
No, and I think almost all of us are public school educated, and even people who are raised or educated in, say, parochial schools or otherwise private schools, have all been fed this mantra. And we heard it, and everybody's going to agree, they're going to recall, and sometime between second and fourth grade, or a combination of those, it was told to us that America is very special, it's a free country, and anyone can be president. And mm-hmm. I believe that that's a really key mantra that we're fed that's intended to carry through our lives because it, like almost everything else that comes from the U.S. government, educationally or otherwise, is an absolute lie. And the this anybody can be president thing is perhaps one of the biggest lies perpetrated on the American public in that it perpetuates year after year after year, and it's been a fraud from the beginning.
Absolutely. I mean, we've gotten to the place where we recognize the voter fraud in its totality because they did it with ballots. They always did it with ballots before. Then in 2000, it became chads. What did they call it? Hanging chads?
Hanging chads.
And we know now that even the company, one of the companies, I heard this within the last day or two, actually. One of the companies that manufactures the touchscreen, it's a company whose name starts with an S. I can't remember it exactly, but they're in California, I believe. And seven of their employees are actually filing complaints that these machines can be rigged electronically to give you a different result. In other words, they're hijacked within the program. So you cast your vote in this machine, and if no one touches it once the person at the polling place turns it on, it does its thing because they've corrupted the software itself. It's got Trojans in it that will do the magic that they want it to do. It's a pretty simple thing. Now, they're even complaining that in the state of Florida, these machines, which have, they create a paper trail, have been determined in certain counties to be required to be off kilter so that it produces these hanging chads again. We're not finished with the hanging chads.
No, the problems even predate the electronic voting agenda in this country. I spent some time in Switzerland, and Switzerland is the votingest country in the world. Everything that happens in that government happens by a popular vote. It's a rather cumbersome system, I suppose, by maybe our standards, but it makes the government move slowly because everything comes to a popular vote. And everybody votes. The only people that don't vote are people who are imprisoned or otherwise incapacitated. And it's an obligation socially to vote. That is beginning to slip, but up until a few years ago, it's an obligation, one, for you to be voting, and two, for you to be an informed voter. And also, built within that system, and it was a mail-in system, but everybody knows who everybody is, the voting precincts are small, and the registrar handles all of that. And if there is a contested election, if somebody does so in a simple and timely and procedural manner, a recall of the vote happens instantly, and everybody then, when the recall or the recount has been completed, is completely satisfied that the vote is accurate. And so if we were going to be patterning a voting system in such a way as to ensure qualified and fair elections, we would emulate the Swiss system because it works. It's worked for a long, long time, for decades, and it's accurate. And everybody that participates in the system is completely certain when the final vote tally happens that it's accurate. If not, they challenge it, and then they're satisfied with that. In the States, any time in the previous decades, if there's been a challenged election, the system is set up to where you go ahead and you sue. And maybe 2 years later, you'll get a resolution from a court determining whether the vote was accurate or inaccurate. And by that time, nobody cares because we're 2 years down the road and the elections happen. The people have served their terms, mm-hmm. and it's just an indication that in this country, the emphasis has been to make certain that the system of voting can be rigged. I mean, that's the intent, that's the way it works out, and now with electronic voting, I just honestly don't understand why anybody has any faith in it, because it's just as you described, built into the system. The opportunities for larceny are rather legendary, and the software is proprietary that reads this stuff, and you can't get it. So mm-hmm. We don't have elections in this country. We don't even have the pretense of fair elections in this country, and we have prima facie evidence that as the world has evolved technologically, the voting organizers, the people who set the policy in motion, have done everything in their power to make sure that they remain in control of who counts the votes.
Yes, that's correct. And I would presume that at least going back to 1840, we have been in this state of corrupt elections, maybe even before that, but certainly by 1840. And it can be demonstrated more in more recent times in Chicago with the former senior Mayor Daley. They found stuffed ballot boxes from the Kennedy election, and there were more ballots in these boxes than there were people eligible to vote. So you know they stuffed the ballot boxes. It didn't take a rocket scientist. They found full warehouses of the original cast votes on one side and the replacement votes on the other side. You know,
it's comical, except that this is how our country is run. And it's by these corrupt elections that the policies of government are handed down and the American people are supposed to abide them.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've got this...
I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but I was just going to make a quick point. We've got everybody debating over who is the better candidate, who is the lesser of two evils between John McCain and Barack Obama, and we still have this reality of a corrupt vote, regardless of who you think you're voting for. They can steer it to whatever they want, just to put the puppet that they choose.
Well, interestingly, in this edition of the I.O., we ran, again, it was a 28-page paper, and we ran the Obama story, the first part of it anyway, on pages 11, 12, and 13, and on the center spread on pages 14 and 15, which were able to run color, there is a very interesting document, and then we finish up your article on pages 16 and 17. And in this two-page spread, It's a voter's guide, if you will, from a guy named Jerry Niep of the Free Press in Kerrville, Texas, and it's a brilliant, brilliant work. And it centers around an article written by Dennis Cuddy, Ph.D., in which he takes every single presidential election from 1900 forward and shows how the two candidates running as Democrat or Republican in every single election from 1900 to present, it doesn't matter who wins because they are both authorized and puppets of what he calls the PE, the power elite. And that's in every single election. He demonstrates in a couple of paragraphs how these guys, it didn't matter who won because they were doing the PE's agenda just fine. There was only one exception, however, and that was when Barry Goldwater ran. Barry Goldwater has been the only wild card. And even John F. Kennedy, when he was running, was, as far as the power elite were concerned, was one of their guys. He was born with a platinum spoon in his mouth, and he bided his time. He got to the position, I believe anyway, where he thought that he was going to be able to change the direction this country was going, and the power elite proved to us otherwise, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we had Joseph Kennedy had made a remark that two of his sons would become president, and that raised great speculation that he was possibly the father of Jimmy Carter. In fact, you could see sort of a resemblance in the hair and the teeth, and Carter did get elected. Now, it was for one term, and it was sort of a dysfunctional presidency because he was pretty incompetent as far as a politician went. Most of the major decisions he made, like this rescue attempt that they did out of the desert, where it was sabotaged. I'm sure the Bush clan was somehow behind that in setting it up. But the point is here that this is all done for the public perception. It's the same people working behind the scenes. There might be a bit of a power play as to whether it's the Rockefellers or the Rothschilds that are actually struggling for more control, more power. But as I pointed out, there are some hidden agents behind there that really these people, the power elite, as you refer to them, are not all the way up at the top of the ladder. They're not the top rung of the ladder. They're working for someone else. Now, they have become very powerful over time, but still these secret connections are still there. More of that's starting to come out. I'm seeing this also in others' works, and the reason I point this out, this is not something that I have discovered alone, and I'm not the sole journalist that's seeing this. My path, which was pretty independent of anyone else's research, was followed up by studying their research, and in particular Fritz Springmeier and David Icke, and they come to similar conclusions about some of the, you know, who the power elite are working for. I just thought I would share that, because ultimately that has to come out. We've got to get a grasp on that who's actually pulling the strings.
Well, it's interesting, too. Another article that are two articles, actually, that appear in the paper are written by a friend of mine, an American expatriate who's been living in Germany for quite some time, named Bill Engdahl, William F. William Engdahl. And his work is astounding. He's strangely a contemporary of Webster Tarpley, except that they've taken completely different views on how to interpret data. But their knowledge of historical events is really second to none. They've been studying this material for quite some time and filling in the blanks of our understanding of how the world is and how it got to where it's become. And two events, well, one main event is really shaping the world as we see it now, and that's the conflagration that's beginning in the Caucasus region in Georgia. Most Americans are with the understanding that the Russians attacked Georgia. Well, that's not exactly true. The Russians were prepared for the attack, but it was Georgia with U.S. military hardware, U.S. military training, and Israeli hardware and training, I might add, decided that they wanted to deal with North and South Ossetia, which has been an autonomous region even during the Soviet Union and particularly under the Russian Federation. And it's a really interesting chokehold type point just west of the Black Sea, and there's some minerals in the area that are rather strategic, as well as the land itself. And so they decided to do a power grab. The Russians were there to deal with it. And the U.S. position in the territory has been guided by this thing that has been ongoing since 1904. This gentleman named Mackinder, called the Eurasian subcontinent the geopolitical pivot of history, in that those who control the Eurasian subcontinent control the outer rings, which involves northern Africa and in Europe and into Russia. And then if you control that, you control the rest of the world. And so the U.S. post-World War II strategy has been very much involved in observing Mackinder's counsel in this area and prosecuting a geopolitical strategy to accomplish this thing. And it's now being advanced by the neocons. And what Engdahl points out is that NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, has been expanding some, and it's being used as the U.S.'s global arm, particular to the Eurasian subcontinent, to take control. And since the Clinton era, the U.S. has been intentionally aligning offensive nuclear weapons capability around Russia. And the latest gambit by the United States, beginning, well, at least officially in April of this year, was to have the Ukraine and Georgia admitted to NATO. And that was proffered at that time. There is going to be a vote taken in December of this year, and the U.S.'s supposedly greatest allies and strongest allies, Germany and France, have said, no, they are not going to vote in favor of the Ukraine and Georgia being admitted to NATO. And it's a rather bold move on their part, a very obvious difference in opinion from the United States. But what they're essentially saying is that with NATO membership comes a pact that if any one NATO country is attacked, then all of the other NATO countries are obligated to respond. And they see the U.S. moving in a certain, hegemonic way towards putting missile offenses right up against Russia, and they see World War III or IV or V, I guess, depending on how you want to count it, happening in that region, and they don't want to be drug into World War III because of U.S. political maneuvering in its imperialistic sense. So I think that was a very large miscalculation on the part of the United States, and this issue is really growing and festering. The Cold War is back on, by the way, and this time, and this is going to be difficult for Americans to accept, this time Russia has the moral high ground, and the U.S. is now the world's nemesis nation.
Well, I agree with that, and that is part of the script, too. You see, their intention now is to turn all of this power over to China. China is, if you look at what's happening in China, by next year, I'm going to guess China will have doubled its wealth on a worldwide scale. And China has got a huge military. They're investing money into their military. Of course, all of this is done under the pretext of these are the bad guys here. These are the, and I'm not promoting communism or socialism or any of that, fascism. What I'm just saying is that through their script, they say, well, the communists are bad, but the socialists are bad too, because the socialists will attack and the communists will attack them, and they're historically bad, and yet something as simple as destabilizing the ruble, stop the Cold War, it doesn't make any sense. No one seems to, and I'm jumping around a little bit, but you remember I wrote about Wantagate. Yep. Why didn't we ever question where this $27.5 trillion came from? If Russia had that much money, do you think one man could have brought that country down to its knees? That's a humongous amount of money. In fact, it was reported that if Austria got the $4.5 trillion settlement that Wanta was to get, that they would be the richest country on the planet. So what was this $27.5 trillion? What we were missing was the gold theft that was going on planet-wide. All this story about Wantagate was nothing but a smokescreen for the gold theft going on. Massive amounts of gold everywhere in the Philippines, in Indonesia, South America, everywhere. And not to mention the loot that had been stolen at the end of World War II. A lot of this relates to it. So we're witnessing these skirmishes between these countries when in reality, behind the scenes, what's going on is the money laundering. They're shuffling the funds, and they have to divert the attention here. They got to have a bank go down, a savings and loan. Some brokerage firm has to panic. And they're not really telling us why it's going on. It's more the same money laundering, same theft, and all that. And you're right about what is happening over there in Georgia and in Russia, but this has been scripted to happen that way.
Well, I do completely agree. And not only that, years ago, a friend of mine, he was in the Coast Guard at the time, spent quite a bit of time in the Aleutian Islands as a Coast Guard guy, and he said years ago, just wait and watch. China is going to be the problem. And now, interestingly, the Chinese don't exactly own their means of production either. It's the same banking system that has thrown its emphasis in the direction of China that has allowed this nation to develop the the wealth that it is enjoying today, and it's definitely channeled into high places. It's not necessarily unilaterally enjoyed by the Chinese people. But and yeah. I'm going to ask you this question because I don't know the answer to it. But I've read a couple of other books recently that lend me to believe that the cradle of civilization is quite possibly and actually Russia, and predates a lot of the history that we know to be true now, and that in right about the time Putin was taking over, he rather isolated his nation economically speaking and began developing internally Russia's own resources and has been generating wealth and power as a result. And so my premise, or my theory anyway, is that Russia is the bear that's awakening. The Cold War is back on. It is now considered like a savior nation as opposed to a nemesis nation, title that it had enjoyed all the way through the Cold War, and that it's proceeding on its own authority and is not beholden to the international banking system. I'm just wondering about your thoughts on that. And that also does involve the Watergate story and the destabilization of the Soviet Union and the devaluation of the ruble and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? I'm just curious your thoughts.
Well, I would, to an extent, I agree. I would say that this destabilization of the ruble story was just that. It's too much money. It was too much money for Russia to have. Now, if it was gold, and I think that's really what was going on. This story was designed to hoodwink us into thinking that this was a big move to end the Cold War. It facilitated the money laundering. And it allowed now us to move into what? I think China is a much older civilization than what we have in Russia, by thousands of years. And I think basically that every society that sprung out of that first civilization in China was sort of like, well, let's create an island kingdom in this area that we now call Northwestern Europe, you know, Great Britain. Let's create this island kingdom and let's see how prolific they can become if they become a seafaring nation. Let's teach them to build ships and great war and do all these things. And so you see this develop. And then they went and they created the United States. Who ultimately is coming in here? Okay, you're naming two countries, Russia and China. Don't you find it rather fascinating that they're planning on allowing the Chinese army to come in and take over the United States? This is being planned by these fascists that are running our country. So if I use my intuition and I look a bit at the Earth's history, the Chinese have been around a long time and they've got a lot of stuff figured out. They may be controlling all the gold. They may be controlling all the buttons, because it sure seems like somebody's giving them payback right now for everything they've created. If you just look at how rapidly Walmart and the Chinese markets have taken over, they control the Mexican ports. They're controlling Panama Canal. They're controlling what's going on in the West Indies. They're controlling the South Pacific. Now you have the struggle kind of going on between a few rogue nations, but these nations are paid to play those roles, to be the bad guy. And the fascists have always been the ones that have attacked. They've attacked westward and they attacked eastward into Poland and into Russia and all the former Soviet states. And here they are, they've infiltrated the United States, and they're attacking here, getting ready to pounce on Mexico and Canada and probably all of South America. And historically, after the war, that's what they did. So I think Russia is about to use the muscle that they didn't use at the end of World War II. And someone else is going to shift to be the world's army, the role that the United States played, because our country really served a purpose, and that was, we were the policemen for the rest of the globe. on behalf of the Illuminati. Are people not realizing that we had been overrun maybe a couple hundred years ago? Definitely, as I mentioned earlier, since 1840. And we who built the railroads here? Even though the railroads belonged to the King of England and France through the Pazers, and I wrote about that in this Obama piece in the part four.
Right.
That's what's coming out. Is it part four or is it part three? I think it's in part three too.
the part numbers are kind of muddled, I think.
Yeah, part three, it's in there. But you see that connection. You know, the first shipbuilders were the Chinese. The railroads. Who came here and built the railroads in America? You know,
right.
It was primarily the Chinese. So this network had been established a long time ago. No one ever questioned, why aren't the Indians building the railroads? Why did they import Chinese people to do that, just to build the railroads? There were a lot of them.
Thought, because as a proper engineer, the labor can be directed to do the job, and it doesn't really require specialized labor. It requires specialized engineers.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah, exactly. So you have this. I wasn't here, at least consciously. I wasn't here at the time God put the first seed on this earth of humanity. The oldest civilization existing right now seems to be the Chinese. So, the wisdom, the heritage, the history, and now religion never played a major role outside of Buddha, Buddhism, and then Hinduism. Now, one might argue that the Indian civilization is older. I think those are two parallel civilizations, and I really can't say which. Even when we're dealing with the issue of corrupt history written for the victors, how do we really know? We can look at artifacts, but then they hide those. They steal those too, don't they? They steal the wealth of humanity.
Well, that's an interesting point. And I think we need to get to you. I think we've mentioned it to you before, but there's a series written by a guy named Vladimir Megri, and he's a Russian, and it's called the Ringing Cedars series, that gives a completely different view of the history of the world, of the earth, and even creation as far as that goes. But what we have seen throughout history is that there have been some rather successful civilizations that have sprung up, and they've had language, some of them written, and there is this concerted effort on the part of the illumined ones throughout history to destroy evidence of people gaining and growing beyond being the great unwashed. And so every time a civilization grows, people become spiritually endowed and enlightened, they are destroyed one way or another, and records of their accomplishments are also destroyed. So the
mm-hmm.
world that we know, the world that we began learning about in kindergarten, and what we learn about all the way through college and our own private studies afterwards, is not necessarily the world that's come before us. And if we can take what is happening to us today, and even the artifacts that were destroyed intentionally when the U.S. invaded Iraq this last time around, you can just feel that whatever the earth has been, everything that we understand it to be is stuff that's been told to us, and what we've been told is what has survived, and what has survived has been screened rather thoroughly.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about Jesus, now we're only going back 2,000 years. There has been quite a bit of information coming out that Jesus was trained in the physical body to adapt to this physical reality by the Tibetans and the Nepalese monks, and some Indian sages. So he learned some of the healing arts from there. I don't I don't think he went to China to learn this. So you might even consider that those in Tibet or in Nepal or again in India might be the most ancient of the civilizations. Think about the spiritual wisdom that's there and the metaphysical wisdom. That being the highest kind of wisdom that you can have. So
right.
It's not how prolific you can be as a society or that. I mean, rabbits are pretty prolific themselves, and as long as they stay away from cars, they multiply pretty quickly. You know, cars and people. People are, you know, their worst predator.
Right.
But I'm not discounting what you said. I don't know if this work that you're referring to claims that Russia or the Soviet Union, that territory, is older. You know, the whole planet was here at one time. We could go back into Atlantis, into Lemuria, which was also referred to as Mu. We could go back into those ancient civilizations. You know, the Japanese came from the word Japan really means from Pan. There was a continent by the name of Pan, and those were the survivors of that continent. So really, anybody on the planet that was here was of some time period when they began. If we're going to follow one book and say it began from two people, Adam and Eve, then who was it that tricked Eve? Well, they say it was a devil, so they're going to attribute that to a spiritual entity. I strongly feel that there were other humanoids here on the planet, that maybe Adam and Eve were quite distinct in that sense. Not that I intend to get into a religious discussion, but when we're talking about who were the first ones on the planet, who's the oldest society, then you have these so-called skeletons and skulls that they're digging up in deepest, darkest Africa, and this is Xenanthropus man and Cro-Magnon man, and you know they're claiming go back millions of years. Well, I'm not certain that I buy that carbon dating exactly, but at least for 450,000 years. Now, who was around 450,000 years ago, and who has been in control? You see, that is becoming an issue, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, and even today, we're going forward with public policy on sciences that ain't. For instance, the allopathic medicine, or the Western model of medicine, which is the germ theory of disease, has given rise to this pharmaceutical age we live in, and the vaccine concept works, and it's a fraud. I mean, it's demonstrated as a fraud. So we go forward with public policies on science that ain't so. I mean, it's just a lie. And there's numerous aspects of our universe as we know it that are coming to us, and we form our opinions based upon people who have political reasons to lie to us. So at this point, I think that I've probed deeply enough in a lot of different areas, or actually, let me restate that. I've read the work of a lot of different people, and I've seen the fallout politically and the consequences to our own culture here and now, and many, many cultures before us, and I can safely say that I don't know what to believe about almost everything.
Yeah,
so
well,
all we yeah, can really do is follow our intuition and follow our heart and attempt to be discerning. And I just no longer take anything that anyone has written at face value, because all writing is politically motivated. Even a poem, even the Bible. People can argue that it's the divine inspired word of God. I'm not even here to debate that. But what I can tell you is that men wrote it down. And men's interpretations are subject to interpretation, and if it was written, it was done so for political rather than spiritual reasons, because spiritual things don't need to be written down, they just are. And so everything that's written down is political. It doesn't matter whether it's the Bible, the Quran, or any other theological tract, or a poem by Emily Dickinson, or a article by Don Harkins or Don Nikoloff. It's all political. It's attempting to sway people's opinions. It's attempting to make them feel or think something. And with that in mind, everything that's been written, everything that we have to draw our opinions from, are political. And we need to take them as such.
Mm-hmm. I can say this, and I think you know this about me well enough, and certainly my listening audience knows this about me, is that my approach to this type of research is based on the first feeling. I either see the picture or I don't see it. And so I'm either confirming or attempting to validate the picture that I'm getting, or I'm attempting to clarify the picture, bring what I'm not seeing into focus through the facts that I uncover. And so one could say almost that's intentionally based research that's attempting to produce an outcome, a predetermined outcome. That's not what it is at all. It's finding the truth, feeling the truth, seeing the truth, but now going out and finding the facts to support that truth.
Well, it's kind of a beautiful thing, actually. In the area of research that seems to be occupying the predominance of your time these days, the stories of some of these political figures, the people who are in the news right now, they exist. He was born on such and such a date. He went to school here. He did this there, said this over here. And so you go, okay, groovy. Okay, we've got a starting point, don't we? He says he was born on such and such a date in such and such a place. Okay, well, where are the documents that prove that? I, for instance, was born February 18th, 1963 in Boise, Idaho. You or anybody could pay the vital statistics in Boise, Idaho, and get a copy of my birth certificate. And there it is. It's unadulterated. It comes right out of there. My dad, my grandfather, your dad, your grandfather, everybody we know, if somebody wanted to find their birth certificates with a little bit of work, boink, there they are. And so Obama was born, what, August 4th, 1960? Okay, let's check it out. And lo and birth certificate doesn't show...
61.
Oh, 61, excuse me. Yeah, I was just checking your facts, Don. You're right on point, man. But no, with that in mind, I mean, that's a starting point. That's a date that is not really in dispute. The mainstream media laps it up. Everybody that's ever hired him or let him enter school has lapped it up. No one's ever really questioned it. It just exists. Okay, well, we're going to take it a step further. Was he born that day? Let's find his birth certificate. Well, there isn't one. There isn't one. And that's anomalous on its face. You have one. I have one. Anyone can get it if they want it. Why doesn't he have one? Why doesn't John McCain have one? Why, you know, why? It's because. And the model of your
because
research
because political puppets
that.
Don't get them.
that's right. Because they're created in a test tube somewhere or something. And I think the facility where such individuals are created doesn't produce pieces of paper like that. And if they did, they wouldn't be recognized as an ordinary birth certificate.
Yes,
but yeah, exactly. But so in other words, I think that your research begins on the assumption that these stories of these people's lives are real. We're just checking them. And then when you start at ground zero with a birth certificate and it doesn't show up, the opportunity for one to engage in additional research just widens significantly, because the very fact of their citizenship, their date of birth, their parentage, and their general ancestry suddenly is in question.
You're speaking about something, Don, that's fundamentally, foundationally important, and that's what ground does the person stand on the first day of their life? At what time and what place did that event occur? And that just happens to be a restriction. Well, in the mind of those that are putting this guy forward, he's representing the whole planet. It doesn't matter. But then the question becomes, is he from this planet? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Let's not discuss that too much in print.
but it really does,
doesn't it? I mean, if there's no other record anywhere, then we do get to wonder, don't we?
Yeah. Now, someone can take that literally or metaphorically. It's up to them.
That's right.
And there are plenty of people out there that understand exactly what that means. But the reason I say that, see, and you pointed out very accurately, I have to keep shocking myself into this reality of, well, this is the date they gave us, but there's nothing to substantiate that, so why do we even pay attention? Let's see if I can discover another date. Let's see if I can discover some other fact. So it was on the basis of checking out what would be normally tangible facts, an oil company being in a country on a certain date, at around a certain time, that should be provable. And when I found that that didn't hold water, well, now that totally debunks the whole story. Why say that your relatives are there doing a particular job in a particular country at a particular time for a particular company, and that company is not there? It debunks the whole story. That company is much larger than that one individual. And it's the whole reason for that person supposedly being there, and the company is not there. And I'm speaking specifically of Mobil Oil,
right,
as it's used in the story. Quite to the contrary, a very unusual circumstance is taking place in Indonesia, that the country has a government-controlled oil company which was developed by Dutch Shell. Royal Dutch Shell developed Pertamina, and that doesn't sound anything like Mobil. So they would have said he worked for Pertamina. That would have made the story fly. But no one really checked their facts well enough.
Sure.
All I did was go check to see if there's a foundation for the story, because my gut told me, this is a lie. This guy is not an American, and his parents aren't American, and his grandparents aren't American. And you would have to admit, as we work through this piece by piece, sort of backwards and forwards and jumping across the bridge and climbing a tree and swinging on a vine to get back over to our starting point, connecting these dots, the further we went, the more anomalous it got.
That's a fact. And for most of us, you know, the any of us that could someday become president, you know, us, for most of us, that is, when you spend time in someone's life looking at the public records, interviewing family members, or reading the anecdotes from other folks, you become clearer and clearer on what their life has been up to the point of the investigation. It doesn't usually get foggier and foggier. And that's not even just specific to people. That's specific to any area of investigation. That's the point of the investigation, is to narrow these things down. And when, with each factoid you discover, the vagaries widen and deepen, you know you're onto something. It's just simple deductive reasoning.
Yeah, I have to say, and this is for the listening audience's benefit as well as yours, that while that's happening, you get the sense that you're moving in the wrong direction. You know, just because it becomes so broad and pervasive that you think, well, you know, if this path should be more like a straight line, or at least should have a focus, it should be headed in one direction. No, that's not it at all. This was designed accordingly from the beginning to become very obfuscatory. And really, even with the facts, you know that it's very difficult to grasp these until you've been over and over it a few times. to where you understand who a person is, what their role was, how this person is associated, and try to make sense of this. I basically tried to follow the resume role and try to uncover the facts according to how they were presented to us. Now, I didn't get a chronological presentation. I had to assimilate all that information and sort of create a resume. And that's on the basis of what might be total lies. But even using that as my template for the research, I found that the facts that are proclaimed to be the history of this individual were all made up. I'm sure if I really looked into some of the lesser details about when did the dating start or when was the actual marriage, I'd probably find dispute there somewhere.
Sure.
You know, like the traffic tickets.
Oh, that's really weird. That's an elitist vibe. I've seen it around here. We've got a prosecutor that runs around with studded snow tires on in August. You know, he doesn't care. I mean, he's not going to get busted for him. But what kind of a boorish jerk would run around, I mean, even with snow tires in August? Why would you do that, except that you're just a jerk? And the same thing would be with parking tickets. Now, parking tickets happen, and they're usually irritating, and most of the times when people accumulate them, or accrue one or two, it's because they didn't get to the meter on time, or they parked in the wrong spot, and they didn't know it. But in the case of Barack Obama, as you illustrated, this was a pattern. It never got paid, and nobody cared. And that's not the way it works with you and I.
17 years. Now, that's in the part four. 17
right.
years outstanding traffic tickets. That would earn somebody 25 to 30 years in prison, I would think.
Well, at the very least, well, geez, we had a guy that I can't remember exactly where it was, but a guy that didn't pay a couple of traffic tickets, and he just lost his house. He's a guy that the city, I can't remember, we ran in the I.O. this month, and I won't get it now because time's running short, but this, I think it was in Milwaukee, actually. This guy didn't pay parking tickets. He was a disabled fellow with some kind of slipping mental problems. He was on Social Security disability. He couldn't cope with the letters and stuff, and he had a all-paid-for $265,000 house. And a court accepted the city's desire to take it from him for parking tickets that accrued to like $2,500 in a four-year period of time. And so Obama's 17 years of all these different tickets only equaling $400 is not, they're not even applying the same actuarial science to Obama and his tickets, because the fees and penalties for such unpaid infractions would be huge, just
especially,
huge. I mean,
especially
they
in the Boston
astronomical
area.
Over time.
Yeah, especially in the Boston area.
Yeah, one would think so.
You know, compared to Milwaukee, I mean,
sure.
Now it's you know, it's definitely a political favor was paid or is due
sure.
somebody. But
no, he was,
the
he was
way,
protected and all that, and they left him alone. He didn't care. That's,
yeah.
that's a boorish trait that is really indicative of the guy's real character.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and then there are so many other things. Of course, we don't want to give away everything. That's going to be, we're going to have this up on my website, I guess, tomorrow, right?
That is, yeah. Boy, thanks for putting me on the spot. But yeah, what I'm going to do after the show, I've got some reading I need to do, and then I'm going to get a good night's sleep, and I'm going to be up at dawn with a really stiff cup of Joe, and away we go.
Okay, well, people will be able to read the conclusion of this, which basically ties all these loose ends together and reveals some previously unknown stuff that it's just what you find when you're doing research. I was very exhaustive in the manner in which I was looking for facts to support or to point me in the direction of where this guy was from. And he's not been able to prove he's an American. Is that any surprise? Everyone's wondering where he came from. Well, obviously, he didn't come from America. That, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. Because we know our own in some way. And certainly, if we saw someone rising to popularity in the political arena, it would have started at a very young age. On some level, we would notice it. It wouldn't be such a big secret. It wouldn't be this covert thing that has ties to all these big corporations like it does. And really, unbeknownst to the public, we're not even aware historically or educationally how important some of these companies are and who controls them. We praise these companies as being these American institutions, and really they're controlled by foreigners. Companies like Boeing, for instance, and Standard Oil and Mobil Oil and all these companies, yeah, they have American sounding names, but they were agents working under someone else that was fronting for these. And we can associate the relatives of Obama with that very group of people directly. And these are people that conduct most of their business internationally in foreign countries. Wouldn't you agree, Don?
I think that is the main point that you've discovered with the Obama research is you've revealed that there is this subculture that has been using aliases and also utilizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and other mortgage scams and securities in order to pull off the largest real estate swindle in world history, and we're beginning to feel the repercussions of that now in the form of trillions and trillions in public indebtedness that's going to be saddled on people as the Federal Reserve buys all this stuff out. And during this process, this undercurrent, this subculture of the powerful types and their minions have been taking trillions in profits.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I would have to say that aside from the fact that his presidency is a fraud and that he's a fraud, he's the most created man I've ever really run across, the connections that you've revealed go to the mortgage collapse in this country, which leads to the economic collapse and the domino practice of things. But these people, he's part of it, his family's part of this culture that has pulled off the biggest real estate swindle in world history.
Mm-hmm. And he's basically been trained to play this role. I think of this campaign slogan, change you can believe in. Well, first of all, I don't believe. I'd prefer to know. Secondly, and that's just a perpetuation of the matrix right there.
Sure.
But there's been no identification of the change. Now, if you want to, to me, it sounds, it's got a little bit of irony in it. You know, yeah, you're going to believe this one. When it changes, you're going to believe it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And even yesterday as I was driving in to pick up the paper, I caught a moment or two of John McCain on C-SPAN, and he was in Orlando, Florida. And for the first time, I think this deadbeat of a politician had a slogan, and it was something like, it's time for real change in Washington, D.C. I thought, wow, that's clever.
Oh, wow. I thought he was going to say something like, nobody doesn't love Sarah Palin.
We have the beginning of an expose on her as well in this edition of the paper. She didn't even write her speech. A former speechwriter for President Bush wrote her speech. She is a religious zealot of a really bizarre stripe, and the way she has handled the affairs when she was mayor of Wasilla, Alaska, and how she's handled affairs for the state of Alaska in the last 19 months she's been governor, show that she is not exactly a fiscal conservative.
Yes.
She's a tool of bankers, and she just increases in indebtedness wherever she goes.
Mm-hmm. Last night, all of 5 seconds, I turned the TV on and just to see what was on CNN, and I got one of these, you know how they have these pundits in the split screen, where they had four of them up there.
Sure.
And one woman was pumping this mantra now that this is good for America. Sarah Palin is sexy. This is the claptrap that they're putting out there now. Sarah Palin is sexy. That this is going to be the next vice president or potential, you know, inherit the heir to the throne, so to speak. I mean, this is insanity that this is going on. That type of media should inflame people to the extent that they take their television sets and just smash them with a sledgehammer, never to return to that mind control again.
Well, it should be factored into the equation that John McCain is a very unhealthy man. He's got cancer. I mean, he appears periodically with a rather large tumorous-looking thing coming out of his face. He does have other health issues as well, which are classified. I don't think that we can really get those. And the likelihood that at 72, with the health problems he has and his outbursts of anger and everything else, the likelihood that he's going to survive his presidency is rather small. And so that puts Sarah as the president. Now, and there's no doubt that she's as cute as they come, but I don't believe that that is something that people should be considering as a criteria upon which the office of the vice president should be won or lost.
Well, I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, that's, first of all, that's just a matter of, you know, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. That's certainly not a qualification for running the country, any country. Golda Meir was a great prime minister for Israel, and she was educated in the United States. I presume when she was young, she was attractive. In the eyes of someone older, as she got older, she probably remained attractive. There is a difference between that type of beauty and the Barbara Bush type of beauty, which I don't even know if I should say what I'm thinking right now. I could really make an accurate comment, but I wouldn't want to anger the matriarch of the Scherf family. So.
You don't think you've accomplished that already?
Oh, I'm sure I have. But you see, this is the point, is that people like that, you know, you can call me what you want to call me, but don't mess with my kids. Well, or you're dead. I mean, she made some kind of comment like that on the Larry King show, threatening to kill people over the fact that you're bringing out the truth about who their family is not exactly a fair playing field. You know, we're the truth is the truth, and that is the issue that has to come out, regardless of what these people want, regardless of what they created, regardless of how corrupt they choose to be. The truth has to come out, and we have to have a way of dealing with it. The problem has been, historically, that people have always been too chicken to do anything about it once they discover it. Like, well, we can't talk about that, or it's politically incorrect to bring this up. What? Tell me one thing that politicians do that are correct, that warrants that we are politically correct ourselves. They're the politicians. You know, we have these terms and these mindsets that we have to tolerate this stuff. But that said, you know, these are fictitious families. They're not who they say they are. They have built empires around each other and around what they do outside of our knowledge. And when we do find it out, they want to silence us. They want to do away with the people that are carrying the message and bringing the truth forward. How many times does humanity have to make that mistake before we finally grow up, realize that it's not going to get fixed unless we get rid of those problems and create something anew?
And if every election, every presidential election, every 4 years since 1900 can, in about two or three paragraphs each, be explained away as two candidates absolutely controlled by the global elite, how many more elections are we going to go through still believing that we're voting for a president?
Yeah, well, see, now, anymore, what is it? It's idol worship. It's image. It's public image. They're creating, like they create Federal Reserve notes. They're creating these people out of thin air, making up these stories and flaunting them in front of us. And, you know, who cares if Sarah Palin is sexy? What does it matter? Is it going to bring peace to the world? I doubt it. Because look at the havoc that Anna Nicole Smith created. Look at the havoc Britney Spears created. And I'm not even saying these women are beautiful, but it's the idea of they're supposed to be sexy. What has Madonna done to bring peace to the world? You know, these are the idols that they've created. They all happen to be blonde. And some of them quite dysfunctional, the ones that are still around. Those are creations of the same matrix that's creating everything else. You know, we've got to move beyond this, our consciousness. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people are going to be left behind. As things change and we move to a higher state of beingness, these things are going to fall by the wayside. And wonder if we'll ever learn collectively as a society. Probably not. We've been too dumbed down, too unconscious of what's going on. And, you know, we're talking about really something that's multi-tiered, it's multi-dimensional. It's a lot to handle in one show, let alone one newspaper.
Sure.
One edition. Well, any closing thoughts? I did my share of talking, and I want to give you the opportunity.
No, you did a really good job. I think it was kind of a fascinating show. We probed some areas that are not generally talked about, I think, and your research has kind of led us into discussing some things that aren't ordinarily talked about. And I think that's really probably our greatest responsibility, our greatest hope, is that we can take everything that we've learned ever since we were little kids, ever since the indoctrination began, and encourage people to view things in a different way. Because, let's face it, the Republican and Democrat national conventions were scripted. The state conventions leading up to it were scripted. And when you look at it, our entire lives are scripted. The things that we say, the things that we think, the actions that we take, are predictable because it's all been scripted. And you can take that as deeply as you want. I personally think that our closest held beliefs are the ones that we should be analyzing more thoroughly. And the presidential elections every 4 years is just one of them. And every morning when you get up, and if you believe something with your heart and soul, find out why it is you believe that way. Is it because somebody told you, or is it because of something that you experienced yourself? And I think that what most people are going to find is that it's because of stuff that they've been told. And so, there it is. Look deeper. Look deeper. This world has been scripted for you. You're behaving exactly the way you're supposed to behave. There are no independent thoughts unless you go outside the box and start thinking purely for yourself.
Yes, that's. I agree with that. If I can make a quick comment about your reference to the political conventions. You know, we had these precursory announcements that there were going to be these detention centers set up, sort of like a prison camp on the site itself, that if there were any protests, if there was any organized dissension to what was going on, these people would be rounded up and arrested and put in this prison camp or incarcerated in some manner. And, of course, we had it happen at both venues, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
My estimation was that all was staged, that they said, look, okay, we want you guys to dress up like priests. We're going to shackle you all together. You know, you're this. In fact, that was symbolic of them destroying Christianity. They got eight priests together and arrested them for walking through this police line. And I see that as a symbolic assault on our religious freedom, and I see it as we have good intelligence information, and there are those that would interfere with the democratic process, you know, your voting process, and we're about to pick your world leaders or your nation's leaders, and because of that, we can't have these wackos come and interfere. All of that is staged, because anyone in their right mind is not going to walk into that situation and put themselves at risk. There are plenty of people that are willing to make those sacrifices, but we always assumed that that's what they were doing and never really gave it a second thought that maybe they're all working for the same side, you see? And that's the show, that's the movie for us to see. To get us
well,
to fear.
Well, we know that up here. We're in North Idaho, and while Pastor Butler was up here and the Aryan Nations was up here, we know that 30% of the people that attended his church were feds, and whenever there was a parade, most of the people who showed up were feds, and in that milieu would always be an agent provocateur that would do something that would grab headlines and therefore perpetuate the fraud that this was a really going concern and that North Idaho was filled with hate and that the Nazi element was alive and well. And the truth is that had it not been for the federal presence, almost nobody would have ever heard of the Aryan Nations, and that a little parade in North Idaho would have lasted about 10 minutes each year and nobody would have known the difference. But it turned into a big, huge media event for the purpose of creating certain illusions and accomplishing certain ends. And even the World Trade Organization meetings, certain people are sent there to be provocateurs. There's all sorts of this activity going on. But I do think that they are having a hard time really keeping control of the images that come out of these events. And so it was very carefully scripted. Even the protest was rather carefully scripted. And I believe that they realized that it would be obligatory for the president and or the vice president, and particularly the guy for whom the party was being thrown, John McCain, the presumptive nominee being turned into the Republican nominee for the 2008 election, to have been there. But Hurricane Gustav gave them the excuse to not be there. And had they been there, the protests that would have resulted would have been impossible for them to control. And so they either lucked out or Hurricane Gustav was a very well timed natural almost disaster.
Oh yeah, and then we have Ike coming on its heels.
Yep.
And it's just too planned. And then we've got more activity coming up the East Coast, by the way.
You're going
to want to pay close attention. Yeah, there's a storm that's probably going to go up the East Coast and cause a lot of destruction. This is definitely another thing that's engineered, the weather, like everything else. And I have to say, one area in closing on my Obama comments, and this will come out over time, it wasn't just the real estate, it was the, basically, like the manipulation of the biosphere, our plants, our foods, and our forests. A lot of strange connections in that circle of people. And this is on an international basis. This guy that no one ever heard of has all of these international connections through the people behind the scenes. It's not based upon qualifications. It's all this really crazy stuff going on behind the scenes. You've got non-wood forestry products. What the heck is that? I mean, are we talking about, you know, the dung of the, you know, the elk?
Well, there's actually a lot of things that could fit in that category. I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to, but there's a lot of things that come out of the forest, but there's also a lot of things being manufactured there.
Mm-hmm. Being grown there intentionally. Actually, when you're talking about the Congo and Equatorial Guinea, are not like on the top of anybody's wish list of places they want to go vacation. So you wonder what it is that is there, what is being developed, and how that so coincidentally connects with all this other stuff that we talked about. And we didn't really even go into any major details, but let it just suffice to say that the ability to connect dots is overwhelming, and there's a consistent theme in food and agriculture and bio experimentation and databases and communications. All of the major controlling mechanisms that have an influence on man's ability to survive, really, are being manipulated, and he's got direct or somewhat indirect connections to all of those people. It's just too much of a coincidence that the same types of things pop up of connecting the leads.
And, yep, it all began with the fact that he doesn't even have a birth certificate.
Exactly.
And the thing that he offered up in place of it, a certificate of live birth, is demonstrated on 15 or 20 different points to be an absolute forgery.
Yes.
So we don't know who the guy is. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
It is that simple.
Yes, but we certainly can show and did that he's not who he says he is.
That's true.
That's for certain. And more will come out on that later on. Okay, Don, I've kept you up late. I hope you get some beauty sleep because we have part four coming out tomorrow.
We have work to do.
Yes.
Oh, very good. It's been enjoyable, Don, and I hope your listeners got something out of this. And I hope that they do. I hope they begin to think for themselves on numerous levels. Everywhere you have a very closely held belief, how did you arrive there, and what information put it there, and who generated it? And I think that when you begin attacking things on that, or excuse me, not attacking, but when you begin perceiving things on that level, you can really begin to develop this thought, this spirit of independent thinking that I believe we all need to have if we're going to progress as children of God.
Yes. Well, it was a fun and enlightening interview tonight, and I, too, appreciate where we went. We were all over the place, but it had spiritual overtones, and I like that.
You bet.
So thank you. And
you're welcome. My
greeting. My
pleasure, and we'll be chatting with you in the morning.
Yes. Give my best to Ingrid, too.
We will do that.
And our best, I should say. And I'll sign off here by telling the listening audience you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest tonight, Mr. Don Harkins, the publisher, editor of the Idaho Observer. And Ingrid will come back next time they come to the show. So we wish her the best. Also, we want to thank Donald Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible and Seth Hendrick on the sound. Sound was great tonight again, Seth. And to our listening audience, happy to have you with us. We wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light. And have a good night.
Now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.